Hey everybody, this is the Pick Six Podcast. Sam McEwen along with Evan Bland and our special guest, Tom Chattel. How you doing, Tom?
I'm awake. I'm up. I saw the news about OPS, so
yeah,
it's going to be a very interesting day.
It's going to be a very interesting day in Omaha High School sports. No question, if they don't play football up there, if they're not able to, that's some really, really good football players who may be looking for somewhere else to play very soon. Evan giving us the backwards Huskers and backwards Nebraska in his background there. I like that. Somebody wrote the numbers wrong. But anyway, hello, everybody. We have a schedule. I don't know that I would call that clearing a hurdle. It's more like the hurdle was taken away because finally there was enough, I think, dust up and all that other stuff to just take away the hurdle and release the schedule. And now the hurdle's come. Nebraska football does have a 10-game schedule. We'll break that down a little bit. We'll get Tom Chattel's thoughts on those, just on the schedule being out, the likelihood of the first game being played. We'll see. We'll talk a lot of recruiting later in this hour about Thomas Fedoni and AJ Rollins and some other kids in the area, and we'll have a lot to say about that. And so it's kind of an interesting week because it feels like we have news and camp's starting today, and it doesn't feel like camp's starting today, but it feels like we have something to talk about. We want to remind everybody that our agent, our sponsor is the Schwalbach Agency. Team Schwalbach is a family-owned Allstate insurance agency with 4 licensed insurance pros, saving thousands of Nebraska Husker fans money. They sell homeowner, auto, life, and flood insurance across Nebraska, and they also insure all the big boy toys, motorcycles, boats, RVs, and off-road vehicles. If you've had your roof replaced in the last 5 years, and we've had some pretty big hailstorms in the last 5 years, give Daryl Schwalbach, Kyle Schwalbach, Nancy Mostek, or Kyle Murdoch a call at 402-590-5200. They can save you a bundle, free, no obligation insurance reviews. They're going to make sure that all the Nebraska fans, whether they get into Memorial Stadium or they don't, are properly protected. You can reach them at 402-590-5200. That's 402-590-5200 or www.nebraskaallstate.com. That's www.nebraskaallstate.com. Thanks to Team Schwalbach. Okay, before most of us are certainly before my kids woke up on Wednesday morning, the Big Ten decides it's going to announce its schedule. After days and days of delay, the Big Ten Network has sort of a extravaganza, as they're wont to do, and they release the schedule that way. Kevin Warren talks, I think PJ Fleck talk, a few other folks talk too. But we have a schedule. It's 10 games long. There are 3 bye dates built into it, one of which is shared by everybody. That's the one after Thanksgiving. Nebraska plays Rutgers to start and then dives into some key division games before playing Ohio State and then having a couple more division games late. Penn State's obviously on the schedule. Nebraska swapped out Purdue as a home game. That moves to a road game late in the season. Wisconsin is now one of Nebraska's home games, and they get to host Michigan State for the last game of the year on November 21st, which is the same as 2018 when they hosted Michigan State for the last home of the game of the year at that time. The big tilt against Iowa goes the 4th week. Big tilt against Wisconsin now the 3rd week. So September is going to be one to remember. It's going to be probably the strongest September Nebraska's had to face in a long, long time. I was thinking about this. Maybe the toughest one since 1987 when Nebraska played, if I can recall correctly, South Carolina, UCLA, Arizona State, and some other team in their non-conference schedule. So that was pretty tough. And Nebraska managed actually to win all those games. But it's been a long time since they've had a September this tough, and this one will be difficult. I'll start first with Tom, just your general thoughts and reactions. Now we're 48 hours after the fact, but your thoughts and reactions about the schedule being released, what it looks like for Nebraska, and the likelihood of any of it getting accomplished.
Yeah, Sam, it's hard to even think about football for me. I'm trying to. I can't think about how they're going to do. I can't think about anything but are they going to play the games? schedule was great. It was like a sharp burst of excitement. And then I started thinking about, okay, how many of these games are going to they're going to play? Having to play Rutgers right out of the gate. They don't seem to be in any kind of mood to play football over there.
No.
So it's just sort of a sign of the times. We think about football, but then we think, are we going to get to do it? And so it's like today is the first day of camp, but here I am thinking about OPS, and here I am thinking about Rondale Moore, and how many more of those kids are going to do that? Are any Nebraska players going to opt out? You know, and are they going to tell us if they do? I guess the kids will do it on social media, but
yeah,
it's anyway.
You hope, my goodness.
I'm excited, but I'm also, you know, I'm also worried about the season. So,
you know. You made a really good point about the Rutgers game on Wednesday. I got the impression that just based on people you've talked to and your own sense of it, and you have a pretty fine-tuned sense, that game seemed very unlikely. And maybe Rutgers playing at all seems unlikely.
Right. And I have since gotten an email from a fan that said that the numbers in New Jersey are actually better than they are here in Nebraska right now.
Yeah.
But that said, I've been hearing all summer that Rutgers and Maryland were not going to play this year. So that's the problem with the season. Every school and has their own individual and independent philosophy. You can try to have a conference. You could try to be all for one and all in, but they're all individual universities, and they're going to do what's best for them. And so that makes it hard. I think ultimately what this high school and college season is going to come down to is, some people are going to play and some people aren't. And the people who play are going to have to play each other. And how often they do that will be very interesting. And we'll try to follow along. And when they play games, we'll be there. But I think Nebraska will try to play. I found it interesting that a lot of players that came on Twitter and were very supportive of the football program and the school. And how they've taken it seriously, and how they've taken care of the players. So the mood in Lincoln is good. So, but you're only, you know, able to play whoever else is playing. So we'll see what that is.
Yeah, I think that was a player coordinated effort that you saw there. I think players kind of got together. Those players who talked or said stuff on social media got together and kind of decided that that's what they were going to do, which, I appreciate that. I think that's, that's fair. You haven't seen a lot of schools do that. I think Nebraska probably feels differently about this. I think there's probably a sense, too, that there's a greater sense of responsibility and excitement. Oops, sorry. It was an automatic ad on my computer. There's a sense of responsibility there. To the state that I don't think is forced on them, but I think they understand when they come here that this place does matter. I think that's very fair. What did you, when you looked at the schedule, let's assume for a second that it's played, and let's skip over Rutgers. We'll talk more about Rutgers in a minute, but let's skip over that game. Cause I think if it's played, I think Nebraska's going to win it. One,
right.
Two, I don't know if it's going to be played. But I do think a lot of the games after that can be played if things are okay with the virus overall. And that is Illinois, Wisconsin, Iowa, Minnesota, and Ohio State. They have all those games in a row. And a couple of them are at home, three of them are at home. When you look at that part of the schedule, that little five group of five games, that's some nasty stuff to start the season. And yet – you get the sense that it's not as hard as what they would have had if the schedule had played out as normal in 2020.
Well, I will I will never predict Nebraska to beat Wisconsin or for that matter, Iowa until right. they do it.
Right.
And they haven't done it in many, many years. But that said, Wisconsin won last year, in my mind, because they had a big kickoff return, and then they had a superstar running back.
Right.
Nebraska's offense gave Wisconsin fits that day. They didn't win the game, but they gave them fits.
Yeah.
What does that mean? I don't know, but maybe it means nothing. But to me, one of my takeaways from last season was that Wisconsin and Iowa did not dominate Nebraska physically. That I'm not saying those games were a draw, but Nebraska made up a lot of ground last year. They did not get pushed around in those games. They got beat, by Wisconsin the old-fashioned Oklahoma way. They had a great talent running back, and they couldn't stop him.
But
Wisconsin is replacing that guy, and Iowa is replacing a very good quarterback.
That's right.
Who knew the system, and Kirk Ferentz has those guys every once in a while that they hang around forever, and they know how to beat you. They know how to make plays, and so. Getting those guys earlier, you get them later in November, they find answers. They find other things because they've got systems. They've got programs. They've got guys coming up. But you get them a little earlier, it's a little different. You still have to go to Iowa, but we don't know how these games are going to be played in front of how many fans or what that atmosphere will be like. It's just weird. So. I think they have a chance to win those games. I think maybe a better chance than they've had in the past few years, but especially with the physicality. But Nebraska's defense, so many question marks. Who's going to do what? It's I think the defense has a chance to because they do have a lot more depth and more answers than they've had. Yeah, they have a chance to be better by the end of the year, but I thought it was a better deal for them to get those two teams if they've and let's face it, if they ever beat Wisconsin, it changes the whole season. Changes the whole tenor of the season. It becomes a better deal if you can ever beat them. And so, and now Iowa too. So I think it was a better deal for them to get them earlier than late.
Agreed. I agree with that. The team that I think has changed the most since last season of those teams that they're playing, however, is Minnesota.
Yeah.
And the reason I say that is because they lost their two best running backs. They lost their second best receiver. They lost their best receiver, who's opting out for the NFL draft, and they lost four or five guys on their defense who are their best players. And when you take away Rashad Bateman from that team, which he took himself away, that's a different offense. Now, granted, Minnesota kicked Nebraska's rear end last year. That was a dominating win. I mean, that wasn't like Wisconsin and Iowa at all. And so that was some cause for concern, and I think Nebraska figured itself out by the end of the year. But I do think Minnesota is a significantly different team, especially on offense. They won't be nearly as explosive, nearly as hard to cover. You won't have to worry about those receivers one-on-one anymore because they're not going to be there. I think that's really notable.
Is their quarterback back?
He is. See, but he's going to be back without the two best receivers in the Big Ten West.
See, I don't know how they've recruited. I don't follow recruiting, but I do follow it enough to know that I guess I got my little handy guide out last year, and I went to Minnesota's players, and a majority of their playmakers were, I think, three-star guys. So they may have guys behind them who because of the quarterback are going to be as good, or they might be as effective. So, but the way I saw Minnesota last year was, it was really kind of a special season where they had like a feel, a certain chemistry to the whole team, and like a belief. And whenever they came up upon a hurdle, like the Penn State game, they crossed it. It was one of those kind of years. And it seemed like it was all coming together. But then at the end, they get Wisconsin at home and they can't do it. They don't win the women. I don't know. Did they tie for the West at the end or not? I don't remember.
They did. They but tied they for it. Go to Indianapolis, obviously, so. They didn't represent the Big Ten West in the – yeah.
Right. So right. They had this big year, but they didn't get the payoff. So – You know. Usually, if you have a big year, you kind of come down the next year. It's hard to duplicate that everything that you had the whole karma, all that stuff, the momentum. It's hard to do that again. So, but if you didn't get what you wanted at the end, do you come back hungrier? Mm-hmm. To me, that's a dynamic. Yes, all those players are important. But will they kind of have a hangover or not? I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what PJ, you know, a lot of the mumbo jumbo that works. You know, what's he gonna put in their head this year? Is he gonna get him back up? So, but keep in mind, 2 years ago they came to Lincoln and they got waxed. So
yeah, they did
by the four and eight Huskers. So. I look at them as, yeah, they beat Nebraska. It was a snowball game. But I'm not necessarily buying into that's going to happen every year.
I think that's fair. Evan, when you look at Kevin Warren's tone on Wednesday was very measured, almost beyond measured. It was like his tone seemed to indicate – I don't think there's going to be a season played. That's the way I took it. How did you view his comments? You wrote the main story for us that day. How did you view his comments overall?
Yeah, I thought he was very tentative about it. And he is a guy, you know, he's in his first year as the Big Ten commissioner. He has a track record of very highly prioritizing player safety. And so that's obviously what a lot of this comes down to in his mind. And I think just by the schedule coming out Wednesday instead of the previous Friday or the Monday or the Tuesday, you could really just kind of tell there was kind of an anguish in this thing. Like, do we or don't we? The Rutgers outbreak was reported Monday night, and so that delayed things on Tuesday. You know, and he mentions, too, that he has a son who plays at Mississippi State. So he also can look at things from a kind of a parental perspective and say, you know, would I feel comfortable having my son play in this sort of climate and this sort of situation if he were in the Big Ten? And ultimately on Wednesday on the BTN, he said, yeah, you know, he felt like he would in this moment, but there were a lot of caveats, both in the release that the Big Ten had and what Commissioner Warren said. Yes, we're feeling good to go today, but just know that if things spike, if things change, you know, things beyond the control of football teams. If cases spike in communities or local health officials say they can't go, then they're prepared to shut things down. So, you know, they had kicked the can down the road enough that at some point you had to put a schedule out, right? I mean, they put it out 2 days before fall camp opened, 1 day before some other teams opened who were playing on Thursday or Friday. And so they had to come out with something or pull the plug. They ultimately put it out there. But, you know, I agree with Tom. It just felt kind of odd. Like it was exciting in the moment and kind of fun to parse through the storylines and the things that could be coming down the pike. But at the same time, you know, it's just hard. And I thought, Tom, you put it pretty well at the end of your column. It's not whether you win or lose. It's whether you play the game.
Yeah, that's right.
I thought that was an excellent point, and this season becomes more about that and the financial aspect and the safety aspect and all this than it does the football side of things. So it's going to be really interesting to kind of balance that out and how we digest this season, how we talk about this season, because it's going to be really hard to separate all that other stuff from what's going on the field.
Yeah, I saw that on a bumper sticker. You know, I've thought all along, guys, that this might be like an exhibition season. Really, you know, so much of this is how administrators react. And administrators usually are very cautious and very conservative. They don't like to take risks. And I love the story about the 1918 Nebraska season that we had a couple weeks ago. Where they just tried to get games. They just tried to find anybody who would play, and that's how they had their season. That's why there's a 1918 season in the history books. And this might be one of those deals where we look back and say 2020, they played K-State. They played, maybe the Kearney, or they played Iowa State or Iowa, or they, you know, whoever. They just try Omaha YMCA. They still have a team. I mean, but maybe they'll find a high school team who can't play OPS. I just think this season is going to be kind of wild. And I don't know if we'll have a game every week. I don't know who they're going to play. But I think Nebraskans would appreciate some games and. For the economy down there, and also for the school's budget, anything that would save jobs and maybe save businesses is going to be appreciated. So, and then Nebraska's not alone there. There are other campuses that'll be hurting as well. So, if you can get a healthy team, and call somebody up, we'll see you in 2 weeks. I'm not saying so some of these Big Ten West schools might try to play. To me, the mentality here seems to be different than on the East. I may be wrong there. But I will say, after seeing what Jim Harbaugh accused Ohio State of cheating again already, and he did it to Ryan Day's, not his face, so I guess maybe the Ryan Day's Zoom face. He's added to his Zoom face. That's a game I want to have played. So I don't know if we're going to get it or not.
Harbaugh's different, man. He's what a thing.
He doesn't care. And Ryan Day has got a little bit of ruthless, maybe a whole lot of ruthless in him. And, he'll do the old Woody Hayes, why did you go for two? I couldn't go for three. So, there might be a lot of that. And that's going to make that series fun. Maybe not a lot of fun for Michigan, but what if they don't play and they have to wait? They have to wait a whole year to play again, and they have that quote sitting out there. Of course, the problem for Harbaugh is they have to go back to Columbus next year. So, one more thing, Sam, about the Iowa Wisconsin. Thing and that is, it's going to be split up now. It will not be both at home, both away. I think that's good.
Me too.
Yep.
I know Minnesota wants in on the action. Don't put all the emphasis on those two, but Nebraska is going to put emphasis on Wisconsin and Iowa, and I think it's better to have those split up. So it means we don't go to Jethro's Barbecue twice a year. But at least we get to go once, right, Evan? Or the Machine Shed. That's the other place.
The Machine Shed. I like both.
Yep. Got to get to the shed. That's right. Hey, I want to ask you guys, too. With this new iteration of the Nebraska schedule, does that make you – assuming the season plays out as scheduled, do you guys feel more optimistic about Nebraska's chances at success, less optimistic, or do you think it matters?
Since the pandemic or since the schedule came out, or I don't know.
Yeah, I'm just saying, we've had the whole offseason to digest what the 2020 schedule was with that brutal finish, the second half, and kind of there have been record predictions. Now that there's this new schedule out, do you feel more optimistic about Nebraska maybe winning some of these games given all the circumstances going on, or do you think that it ultimately matters much. Because I guess I look at it in some ways with what Nebraska has coming back at different positions and all the change that, that we're talking about with these other teams. And it feels to me like, you know, maybe Nebraska's, I guess I personally feel a little bit more optimistic at their chances in some of these games than I did with the previous schedule.
Yeah, I guess I haven't paid enough attention to what they've done in the offseason. Not that that matters a whole lot because you're going to get out and play the game. But I guess I always kind of thought that they would be running around 6-6. I don't know who's going to catch the ball, who's going to score touchdowns. They, this offense, the whole thing is based around guys running fast in open spaces and getting to the end zone. I don't know if they have enough of those guys yet. I think that those guys are coming. I'm not sure that they're going to be ready this year, but a lot depends on the quarterback, and everything you hear about Martinez is that he is ready to go. So we'll see. And the defense, how good are they going to be? It's not going to be good enough. I mean, the offense is going to have to carry this thing. And I'm not sure the offense is, again, receivers are as important to this program as the offensive line was to Tom Osborne's program. And the receivers are kind of like the pipeline now. I'm not saying you don't want to block. Of course you want to block. But receivers are big. And they're getting that thing stocked up. To me, a big thing would be the tight end. They got to get the tight end going. We 2 years now, we haven't gotten a tight end going. We need to get that. That's going to be a big thing for this program.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think it's so weird to think about the season because, you know, I thought a lot about it actually, but especially in like May and June when I thought it was more likely you would have, you know, just sort of a normal season. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think they have a chance to finish with a winning record, and I think 6-4 would be a success. The way that you look at it is, you know, you go 6-4 and then you add 2, and they had an 8-4 season. If they go 5-5, they would have been 7-5 because you assume they're going to beat Central Michigan and South Dakota State. And so that's kind of the way I look at it. You know, 5-5 equals 7-5, 6-4 equals 8-4, 7-3 equals 9-3, kind of like that. So I think that's probably the way that I look at it. I think 5-5 or 6-4 are possible. I think anything better than that, and they're having a hell of a year. I mean, really, they're having really a hell of a year. If they go 7-3, it means that they beat some teams that people did not expect them to beat. It means they beat at least 2 ranked teams. It means they probably ranked themselves. And that's possible. I mean, I don't put it out of the realm of possibility that Nebraska can do that. But they do have to score points. I think Tom's right there. And then they're going to have to be able to play some defense. And right now I'm not convinced that their defense will be better than it was last year. I'm not sure what, you know, you're replacing 3 really good defensive linemen. And if you can't stop the run up front, you know, it becomes a harder deal all around. And I think they'll stop Rutgers, but I don't think that Illinois game is going to be easy. If presuming it's played, I think Illinois probably got its best team that they've had since Lovie Smith got there. They're not going to come in and crap the bed. I think Nebraska will beat them, but I don't think they're going to come in and lose, you know, 35-14. So it's going to be challenging at times. The game that I think could end up being either not played or ugly is Michigan State. I don't get the sense when we talk about teams that I think don't have as much appetite to play. I think Michigan State's at the top of the list.
Right. I really do.
Beyond Rutgers, beyond Maryland. I've heard some rumblings about Minnesota, but I just don't get the sense that Michigan State is there. I understand it. They didn't get any spring practices. They have a brand new coaching staff. I don't know that they gain a lot out of having this season, but when you see offensive and defensive linemen who are returning for next year opting out, that's a little different than Rashad Bateman going to the NFL. Like that's a whole different thing. And when linemen start doing that, then, you know, there's a chance that they could have 5 to 7 to 10 players do it. And at that point, Michigan State's going to be pretty, you know, they're going to be pretty thin. So presuming – I just don't get the sense that there's a great deal of energy there to play that game. They'll probably be a pretty dang good team next year. They were young anyway and needed a year. And Mel Tucker's a pretty good coach, but I get the sense that one could be ugly if it's played. You know, I just don't know if it'll come to pass.
I agree. If there's a team that could also opt out of the season, it's also Michigan State probably. I mean, clearly the whole team got quarantined. They don't feel comfortable there. There's something going on there where they don't feel confident, I think, in maybe the atmosphere around them. But you know, Evan, the X factor maybe in whatever season we have is Matt Lubick. And what is he going to make can those receivers now get open because of him? You know, we heard the receivers couldn't get open the last couple of years. They didn't run in the pass routes. And Martinez couldn't find them, and at least not last year. And so are we going to – is there going to be a receiver who really steps up because of this change at the receivers coach? Is Lubick going to – Frost together going to change things? You know, somebody might emerge that we don't know about or we haven't seen. Maybe somebody we have seen who's a lot better. Like maybe Cade Warner. Is he a totally different guy now? It's I don't know. I'm anxious to see that part of it, but I know that is very crucial. You know, Nebraska has a good running back. I don't think he's great. They're certainly not going to hand him the ball every game and try and say go win the game. They're going to have to throw it. They're going to have to catch it. And they're going to have to score. So, but the Matt Lubick factor, I'm anxious to see that.
I think it's kind of a challenge when we follow the team as closely as we do in some ways, because, like, you know, again, I can look at some of these other teams and say, hey, Wisconsin's replacing Jonathan Taylor. Hey, Ohio State's replacing a generational pass rusher, its all-time leading pass catcher. You know, you can kind of go down the list and you know, Purdue's replacing Rondale Moore. We mentioned what Minnesota's putting out there. And it just feels to me like, well, okay, Nebraska's got a third-year starting quarterback coming. It could roll out its entire offensive line again. Its secondary looks good. And maybe it's tough, you know, when we follow the team as closely as we do, to assume that guys like Omar Manning can step in and be guys right away, or Alante Brown can come in as a true freshman. So, you know, Nebraska has its positions to replace the entire defensive line, as we mentioned too. But I don't know. It just feels to me like what Nebraska has to fix, given that it had almost no spring, that it has a condensed fall, and that camp's only now starting today, that I don't know, that it just feels to me like maybe they're in a better shape than they would have been if all those other schools had a chance to kind of go through a full off season.
Yeah. All right. Well, gentlemen, I've got an interview here. I'm going to leave you, but I will say that, the Michigan State game, you're right about that. That maybe it may not happen. I wonder about Penn State coming here. Could that be one that also does not get played? We'll see. I mean, this thing may be over in October. It may be four or five games, and we sort of base the progress of the program on some of those. And right, you know, maybe, like Evan said, maybe they've got the upper hand in some of these. Maybe they win them. And if you can beat a Minnesota, if you can beat an Iowa or Wisconsin, and that's all you do, that's all you play, you know, maybe you lose to one. I don't – but I'm saying if you win some games and you feel good and you get to practice 2 months, I think it's a hell of a deal for Scott Frost. It's a heck of a deal for this program. I think they going into next spring football or next fall. You know, hopefully we're doing something different than this next fall. But anyway, I just think that this season might be judged on what can you take out of it. And it might be a handful of two or three games where you did something that you haven't done before. If they can just beat Wisconsin, you know, okay, it's in the pandemic, but it's going to feel good. It's going to feel a little different. So It'll feel like progress. So anyway, we'll get through day one today, day one, and we're not going to be there. Obviously, we're not going to be standing around in that little.
Yeah, it's too bad.
The holding pen and waiting for them to come up, but we'll get through day one. Again, we'll get to day two, and we'll try to get to the first game and get to the second game, and that's how it's going to have to be this year. And guys, it was great. Be safe, be good, and
same to you.
Happy football!
Yay! Thanks happy for football, doing it, Tom. We appreciate it. Yeah, my thoughts are this. If it gets started, I think the likelihood of it finishing is a lot better. That sounds like an obvious statement, but I think part of what happens is it's kind of like when you get in a pool and the water is really cold at first and then you acclimate. And if they can get a couple of games in, I think just the world in general will feel more comfortable with this process sort of ensuing. I think prior to that, it's going to look, really daunting and it's going to look really hard. But, Major League Baseball started and three or four teams technically have been quarantined, but two teams had positive test outbreaks. Did they stop the sport?
No, they did not.
They did not. Were there a lot of people in the media that said they should?
Yes.
And they didn't.
Yep.
And they just move forward. And that it's going to take some of that. It was same thing with the NBA bubble. 2-3 weeks before the bubble, there were a lot of people saying, this isn't going to work. It's not going to work. It's not going to work. There was a guy that went and got wings, all this other stuff. And it's like, it's not going to work. It's not going to work. And then it works. And people just kind of go on. Like it just – PGA Golf, Nick Watney or whoever it was. I don't know if it was Nick Watney. Somebody tested positive. Oh, my God, it's not going to work. It's not going to work. And then it works. Jimmy Johnson tests positive in NASCAR. It's not going to work. It's not going to work. And then it goes. So some of this is based on can it get to the starting line and can it actually start the race? The challenge in football is that they're in college sports – is there are so many different kinds of facets and forces that I don't think really want the sport to be played, for one thing. There's a lot of different people that I think will make it hard. And there is also the amateur athlete aspect of it, which says if these athletes play and someone gets sick, they will have done so on the behalf of a sort of morally corrupt institution. And in Major League Baseball and in NBA and in the NFL, they're getting paid millions of dollars. So they know what they're going into. They have the ability to, and they're getting paid if they do it. With athletes, they have the ability to opt out. About 20 Big Ten players probably have already. But if they do opt out, they just get their scholarship. And if they opt in, they're not getting anything more really than a scholarship. And so you've had these player movements, the Big Ten United one, Mountain West United one. Those have been a little bit more directed toward the actual season at hand. The Pac-12 one was not a particularly serious proposal because it was proposing things that cannot be achieved in 2 weeks. And, you can't dismantle the entire NCAA model and distribute $20 million to student athletes on campuses in 2 weeks. And you can't do that. And so it wasn't a serious model. It was put together by a player advocate who been trying to unionize the sport for a long time and doesn't want it to be the NCAA, and you just can't do it that fast. But the Big Ten and the Mountain West models have been a little bit different. I think they've been a little bit more focused on safety and testing protocol and, access to a hotline. The NCAA is going to put that out, so on and so forth. And so there's so many different things to navigate before they get to the season. I wanted to mention, so this is as of Wednesday, daily cases on Wednesday. The most cases in America were in California, then Florida, then Florida, Texas, Georgia, Tennessee, Illinois, Alabama, North Carolina, Arizona, South Carolina, Louisiana, Missouri. Those are the top group. Then you go down to the bottom, and who do you think's last? Do you want to know? Any guesses?
Alaska?
No, Maine. Maine, Vermont, Connecticut, New Hampshire, Alaska, Wyoming, Hawaii, Delaware, District of Columbia, Kansas, South Dakota, West Virginia, North Dakota, Rhode Island, Montana, New Mexico, Massachusetts, Oregon, Nebraska with 332 cases, and then right after Nebraska, New Jersey with 377. So Nebraska has the fewest number of cases of any big school in the Big Ten footprint per day. New Jersey is second. But here's the biggest difference between Nebraska and New Jersey. So right now, the cases are actually very well controlled in the state of New Jersey. But here's the thing. When it gets to deaths per 1 million of population, Nebraska's quite a ways down the list, a long ways, actually. I think sixth from the bottom, something like that. The least is Hawaii, Alaska, Wyoming, Montana, West Virginia, Oregon, Maine. And then Nebraska's in there somewhere. I can't remember where they're at. Nebraska is about in the middle, 176 deaths per 1 million population. New Jersey has 1,793. And when you've been affected like that state has, I think it's pretty natural and understanding that you will do just about anything to make sure that doesn't come back. And they've had 15,000, almost 16,000 deaths in the state of New Jersey from COVID. And their perspective, the level of sorrow and pain and all those things that they've experienced is very different from what Nebraska has experienced. And so you have to have some understanding for where the people who are in and around that state and who may have decision-making power at Rutgers, you have to understand where they're coming from. And where they're coming from is they had a horrible spring. I mean, it was a terrible, terrible spring. And even though things are better now, they want to move, you know, heaven and earth to make sure it doesn't get that bad again. Whereas in Nebraska, although obviously people have lost their lives and that's tragic and horrible, the experience hasn't been quite as bad. It just hasn't. And so I think that, you know, there's an informed level there that I think people have to appreciate. My understanding of Rutgers as a football team, I think Rutgers probably wants to play their game. I don't get the sense that Rutgers wants to bow out of this. I think there's powers that be around that program that may not feel the same way. And we're going to find out really soon, because Rutgers went into its quarantine on July 25th, which means they're about ready to come out of it real soon, right? And so even though other kids have gotten cases and they've tested positive, the team, not all the team has it. And so if they went into quarantine on the 25th and there's players who did not test positive for it in 14 days, they should be able to leave and they should be able to start practice relatively soon, whether that's this weekend or it's Monday. If it goes on for weeks where they're still in quarantine, even though players have not tested positive, then that gives you a sense of where they're at as a program. Like you'll know pretty quickly. If they start practice with the 70 or 80 guys who can, then you'll feel better about that first game being played. If they're still in quarantine by Friday of next week, which is August 14th, then that means that they've kept all the guys in quarantine who didn't test positive and have been quarantined for, you know, 20, 25 days. And so we'll know pretty fast if that game's more or less likely to be played.
I just think I keep going back to like, okay, whenever Nebraska plays its first and second game and whenever it scores its first touchdown, like, I don't know, just will it feel normal? Will it not feel normal? You know, at what point does the discourse this season turn mostly to football, or instead of tracking, you know, red shirt games used, are we starting to track positive cases? And that's going to be part of the rhythm every week too, is, hey, did the team that Nebraska just played, did anybody test positive? And what does that mean for your availability? And that's to me is one of the most fascinating parts of this season, is just how we look at it game to game. You know, the Rutgers game, like in a normal situation, what we should be talking about is, you know, is Noah Vedral going to be the guy, and what would that matchup look like, and all this, but it's not, right? And so, right. And what's their limit? 500 fans, I think, is kind of what's been mandated by their state government, 500 fans at the game. I mean, that's
500 people. There's not going to be any fans.
Yeah.
It'd be parents.
It's just
parents and players. Yeah. It's university personnel, maybe the media. I don't really know.
Yeah. We don't know if media is allowed. We don't, I mean, Nebraska hasn't even put out there what its situation is going to be. You know, Iowa said 10 to 15,000. Penn State said no fans at all. No people. I mean, that's mind blowing.
That may change. I don't understand the, again, it's a tricky situation, and I totally understand where everybody's coming from. It's a challenging situation because, you know, Beaver Stadium, which is what they still call it, right? Mm-hmm. If you put 20,000 fans in Beaver Stadium, Evan, okay, I'm not a scientist or an epidemiologist, but 20,000 fans in a 100,000 person stadium, tell me that's not safer than 300 people in a store. Come on. I mean, so I don't know what the thinking process is with the state or the health departments about, how they can't put anybody in the stadium. I think the bigger issue, and I know I'm confident of this, is the bigger issue at Memorial Stadium isn't going to be seating the fans once they get in. You can space 20,000 fans pretty easily. It's the getting them in there.
Absolutely.
The concourses and all that stuff. But once you seat the fans in the stadium, the spacing is going to be such, and it's an outdoor event. It's harder to, I think the bars on Friday night are a concern. Like that's where I think you're getting the graduation party that has, 50 people in a house and 50 people outside the house. And there just seems to be a hell of a lot of people in there. Those are the things I think to watch the most closely. So I don't know what the state of Pennsylvania is going to do, but my sense is they'll end up getting 5 or 10,000 fans inside, Beaver Stadium. We'll see. But yeah, it's going to feel different because there's not going to be a crowd. And, reporters are always at the intersection of these things. So, on the one hand, I want to be able to cover the games. On the other hand, I have this thing, and it comes from Twitter or wherever it comes. This shouldn't be happening. This shouldn't be happening. And so, we're always at the intersection of what public, of that conversation. We're there to cover an actual competition. The story is going to be that the competition was played. Let's say we get to the season opener at Nebraska, September 12th, and there are people, protesting the game outside. We don't know. It could happen. I don't think it'll happen, but it could happen in other places. We just don't know. And who's going to stop the protesters from standing out there? Nobody. So it's the First Amendment deal. So you just never know exactly what's going to happen until it happens. And then, the universities will have to adjust. I don't know. But you seem to think that if they're able to play a season, Nebraska is going to be in better shape than they would have been if none of this had ever happened, right?
I do. I mean, again, as we've talked about, they were smart and they were proactive in getting athletes back to campus in waves. They've been working out all summer. That is not the case with a lot of these schools, given outbreaks and just how they've approached this pandemic. But Nebraska has an appetite to play, clearly, more than a lot of the Big Ten. I just feel like with what Nebraska has coming back, and it's been a long time since I've thought that continuity actually favors Nebraska, a long time, years. But I do feel like that's kind of the case this year, where they have an identity. We've talked about that 2019 class that's redshirted and can kind of break in. So the areas where Nebraska has to make big changes, special teams, okay. How big of a transition really is it to install a new punter or a new field goal kicker? You want more time to maybe evaluate those guys, but that's not a huge thing. Wide receiver, that's the big one on offense. But again, you have a veteran, O-line, quarterback, tight end group, all of that. So I don't know. I don't feel like that's a huge deal. And then defensive line, you replace all your starters, but you have a lot of depth. So if I'm a school that is that was supposed to have a quarterback competition this offseason, yeah, I'm nervous about that. If I'm a school that, like Wisconsin, that has to replace the majority of its O-line, like they could be good players, but they just haven't had a chance to work together. You know, what's that like? So,
yeah
I feel like Nebraska's kind of that combination of Nebraska's offseason preparation and diligence mixed with kind of the specifics of its own roster. Yeah, I mean, I do. It does seem like Nebraska's going to do well. And it's interesting because you look at their road games, and for the most part, the whole, like, limited amount of fans thing doesn't necessarily help them. Like, Purdue was never much of a road atmosphere. Northwestern, there's more Nebraska fans there anyway. Ohio State's one that'll help. Kinnick, it'll help. But, like, you know, Nebraska has a lot of its good games at home. I think that's the maybe the counterpoint to, like, you know, Nebraska maybe doesn't have that benefit of the sea of red for Wisconsin, for Minnesota, for Penn State. So that maybe levels things out a little bit. But yeah, it just seems like Nebraska's offseason preparation has it in good position. That's just my take on it.
Yep. The over-under, the betting line over-under that was released today. Let me see. I just got an email about it. Over under for Nebraska is 4 wins. So you going over
4? Yeah, I am going over 4.
Okay.
I think 5, maybe 6 is where I'll end up. How about you?
I would go over. Well, you know, what's weird about this is the Northwestern's at 5.5. And I don't get that.
Really?
I don't get that at all. Like, at all. I don't get it.
Looking at their schedule, what, Michigan State they could beat, Maryland, Illinois is 3, Purdue is 4.
Yeah, the schedule's not hard, but I don't think they're very good. I don't know what the – their defense was good last year, but they played a horrible, like, sort of a hideous ball control offense in order to offset their, you know – and their defense was protected by the fact that their offense just tried to hold on to the ball. Anyway.
Yeah.
I thought that was interesting. I thought that was sort of a strange.
That is odd.
Nebraska's is 4. Over under on Adrian Martinez, 2,005 passing yards.
Yeah, that's the other interesting part about the season is we have to recalibrate kind of those benchmarks for what success is. Like, you know, will Dedrick Mills rush for 1,000 yards? Well, now you're taking away 2 games, so – I don't know. What's the benchmark for a 10-game season? 800 yards? Something like that?
No, I think the benchmark for Dedrick Mills will be 1,000 yards.
Even with 2 fewer games?
Yes. Well, presuming they play all 10, yes.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think Mills is going to have a big year. Big year. And he's going to run the ball a lot, and I think they're going to be able to run the ball, and they're going to pound it, and they're going to have success doing that. And yeah, they'll run the ball well, and I think Mills will be a big part of that so long as he stays healthy. They'll want to throw it around the yard too, but I think they're going to be able to run it. Quarterback, running back, I think they'll have, you know, a couple backup running backs that can run. They can use Alante Brown on sweeps or Wendell Robinson or whatever. I do think they'll be able to get downhill on teams and, you know, pound it out. And so wouldn't be surprised if Dedrick Mills has a comparable year to Divine Ozigbo had in 2018. But remember, Divine, you know, he played all 12 games, but he didn't have – he had the carries that were much more commensurate with, like, having played 10. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Well, he had 155 carries. So if you put 155 carries against 10 games, that's 15.5 carries a game. I mean, I think that's what Mills will get. He might get even a little more. And Ozigbo was able to get to 1,082 off of that. I think Mills can do that.
Yeah, very, very well could.
Yeah. I guess we'll find out. I don't know. Like, I think you kind of want to preview camp, but at the same time, it's just so – we're going to have weeks on to be able to do that, I guess. But Mario Verduzco talked about the quarterbacks last night. It just seems like a weird conversation about Martinez, because Frost said what he said, and he meant it. I was sitting there when he said it. He meant it. But simultaneously, he really likes Martinez. And then Verduzco just kind of, you know, he felt like he had to acknowledge what Frost said, but simultaneously, you know, he really defended his quarterback, so on and so forth.
Yeah. Yeah, I can read his quote was very, I guess, tentative about that in terms of talking about Adrian Martinez's preparation going into last year. He said, I think maybe he probably took things maybe a little too lightly, maybe sometimes, as it relates to practice when we started fall camp. I mean, he still worked hard and did all those sorts of things, but whether he had as much of a consequential attitude about things that he did his freshman year, I guess that would be up for debate. So, you know, he's talking about the quarterback competition from 2018 with Tristan Jebbia. There was something on the line and maybe gave Martinez that edge, whereas last year he was pretty well the clear-cut guy going into that season. And so, you know, Mark, as you mentioned, Verduzco kind of walks the line between acknowledging what Scott Frost said last month with this idea that, hey, you know, he tested him before the season, before every game in terms of the playbook, psychologically, all this, and felt that he was fine. So, you know, they feel comfortable rolling him back out. I thought it was notable that most of the conversation of that position breakdown on the Husker Sports Network was about Martinez. I mean, he did mention McCaffrey and Logan Smothers, but most of the discussion was around the guy who's probably going to be your third year starting quarterback. And so I, if we're talking about the season and presuming it happens, you know, that's one of the big questions. Is it the freshman season that we all saw 2 years ago? Is it kind of that uneven year last year when interceptions and touchdown passes were more or less even and he was riddled with injuries? But, you know, Verduzco also made the point, and this is absolutely valid, that the measure of a quarterback is also dependent upon what's around him. And, you know, you think about the starting center last year was a converted tight end who it took some time to get those snaps down. That you have to take that into account. You have to take into account the wide receiving group just wasn't able to create a lot of space, or the fact that, you know, Wandale Robinson, one of their best receivers, was playing running back.
He's their second best running back.
Yeah, and the defense, you know, struggled quite a bit at times too. So, and he was injured. So, you know, I know it sounds a lot like excuse making at times, but again, if you feel confident in somebody, these are all other factors you just can't ignore. And it does seem like in a lot of ways Nebraska's addressed these in the offseason. So you got to figure they're gonna put him out there. He's earned that, I think, and there hasn't been an offseason for him to step up and prove it, because there haven't been spring practices. So, you know, we'll see. But by all accounts, they feel like he's ready to go, and I think ready to take a big step forward.
Yeah, Adrian's going to get – I mean, again, we have to constantly use this caveat with Rutgers. If Adrian's going to get those first two games to show it, I feel very confident about that. Short of – testing for COVID or getting injured, I think Martinez is your guy.
Yeah.
And we'll get every opportunity to be as good as he can be. You can't go the whole season though with what happened last year and not give McCaffrey a chance. So McCaffrey's going to get a chance if what we saw in South Alabama. And now I'm not saying this because I know this for sure. I should limit that. No coach has told me this, but my feeling is if what we saw against South Alabama is what we see at Rutgers, you know, 45% completion rate or whatever, and it's just a rough go, well, you might see McCaffrey, because I think you have an opportunity then. You're not saving any redshirts. You got to see what the young colt can do. And then there's the running piece. Both are good runners. And so – you're not really having a drop off from the running department. If you go from Martinez to McCaffrey, you might even get a 3 or 4% bump with McCaffrey. Although I think Martinez is a good runner, really good. The receiver should get separation, you know, that they've recruited it pretty well, I think. And then, you know, you hope that at running back, there is a number two who can spell Mills. But Mills, I think, is the kind of guy that, you know, if he told Dedrick Mills, we're going to have to give it to you 35 times today, he would smile and say, all right. I don't think it would bother him one bit. So I think they've got a guy they can roll with who I think is really tough, really physical, will put up with whatever they ask him to. You know, if they lose him to injury or to COVID, though, it gets interesting really quick. I'm sure they're looking for that solid number two. Got to think Ramir Johnson going into game one at Rutgers, going back home. Is going to get a real long look here in camp and an opportunity to play. Let's talk recruiting for a minute. I'm going to start with something that I think it's a developing story. We'll get to your Thomas Fedoni story in a minute. But I would see this is going to be interesting. So the FCS is probably not going to play a football season in the fall. They're probably going to move. Most of it's going to move to the spring. The Big Sky and Pioneer announced that today. And the Missouri Valley, which is the big time league, with good teams, they're going to move their games to the spring too, I think. If that happens, do you think that FCS teams with players who could play on FBS teams that are going to try to play would allow their players to transfer? Because you're going to tell me that you're going to keep a kid like Trey Lance or Kay Johnson until March? Guys that are going to play in the NFL? I don't know about that.
Right. Yeah, it's a mess. I don't know. Do you have a sense? I have no. I mean, this is unprecedented.
I don't know. This is going to happen today, though. This is probably going to happen today.
Yeah.
So, I don't know if over the next 2 or 3 weeks you're going to see kids wanting to leave FCS. I mean, Trey Lance is probably a first round NFL draft pick right now, as it stands, and. I have a hunch that he's probably not going to play at all, because why would he play in the spring? You know, he's already won a national title at North Dakota State. There's a guy out there by the name of D'Angelo Amos, who's transferring from James Madison University. And that's interesting. And the reason it's interesting is because Nebraska is one of the 20 teams that has reached out to him. And he is a FCS first team All-American, in part because he is one of the best punt returners in the country. So he has 1,259 career punt return yards. And he's also really good. You know, he's a good safety. Nebraska has pretty good depth at safety, but this guy is an elite punt returner. It would be interesting to see, right? And he said he's been contacted by 20 schools already. I just don't know. Like, if they move their season in the spring, you got some dudes out of FCS who are going to have some decisions to make pretty fast.
I mean, and that's just one aspect, right? I mean, junior colleges have already announced they're going spring.
Yeah.
Well, but, you know, that's a big
deal.
Those
kids can't get out, though, a lot of times because of their grades. They can't get out.
Yeah, but, I mean, if you're a school like Nebraska who brought in, what, 5 in this class, how do you evaluate that? Is it all off-season workouts?
Right.
You know, these high school situations now, there are kids. Move, you know, if OPS indeed decides not to play football, is there going to be a mass transfer across into Iowa high schools to play? You know, what does that look like? Yeah, eligibility issues come up, and then how do you straighten things out down the line? So if you're FCS and you play this spring, do you also play next fall, presuming a vaccine comes out and things return to a semblance of normalcy? Like, what? There's just so much fallout from this. And you know, it's interesting too, because football is the last, I guess fall sports are the last thing that have yet to be really truly affected by this pandemic, right? I mean, you think about March Madness getting wiped out in the winter, college baseball in the spring. And so this is kind of that last untouched sport. And if things don't get played or they get pushed to the spring, man, this is the kind of stuff that could, you know, change how this whole thing is set up, and could linger for years to come as they try to straighten it out.
Yeah. Just be worth watching in the next couple of weeks here, because there's some kids at the FCS level who are more than good enough. Don't really know, though, how the NCAA would have to change the rules and let these kids go and then let FBS programs add them, which I don't know if FCS programs will be willing to do that. So let's talk Thomas Fedoni. So this is basically Nebraska's number one target, perhaps of any recruit, but certainly among tight ends, pass catchers.
Yeah.
And there aren't any official visits right now. The NCAA isn't allowing those. They're also not allowing unofficial visits. In other words, the thing where prospects come down and meet the coaches on their own and spend their own dime to go see a game or to just hang around. They won't let that happen either. So what you're seeing in lieu of that are these sort of set up prospect tours. And why don't you take the story from there? Thomas Fedoni had a visit to Nebraska. It was a pretty full visit, and it did not involve the coaches.
Right. Yeah. I mean, he had been to Nebraska as an unofficial guy, as an underclassman, a number of times previously. But, the recruiting shutdown has been in place since mid-March. So he hasn't been able to get to LSU, Michigan, some other places that he wants to go see. He hasn't been able to get back to Nebraska either. And so I think what you're seeing, and this could eventually be a pretty big storyline with this team, and it is this 2021 group of Nebraska commits have been working on Fedoni for a long time. And they know him a little bit. Heinrich Harburg, the quarterback from Kearney Catholic, kind of knew him a little bit from 7-on-7. But for the most part, these guys have just been interacting on Twitter. You're talking about Teddy Prochaska from Elkhorn South. You're talking about Henry Latusky from Mount Pleasant in Iowa. And so there's been a lot of Twitter interaction, but they took it upon themselves as commits to reach out to Fedoni last weekend and say, hey, let's crash at Teddy's place in Elkhorn, and then let's go spend the day hanging out with some current Husker players on Saturday. And so that's what they did. Fedoni said he didn't have much going on. So, he was one of a handful of guys who just crashed in Elkhorn on that last Friday night. They pile into Harburg's pickup, essentially, the next morning, roll to Lincoln, meet up with a bunch of current players. They went to Bryce Benhart's house, Turner Corcoran, so some of the younger offensive linemen. They went to go to the watering hole, have some wings. And, by all accounts, it was a big deal kind of visit. They called it his official visit, but it was just a bunch of players hanging out.
Yeah.
And, he had said, sure, he's been to campus a number of times. He'd seen the facilities. He is familiar with the coaching staff. They speak regularly. But he said what he hadn't really done is have a chance to talk to the players, the current players. And so they were able to sit down with him and talk about, the mindset of the program, what it's like day in and day out, a different perspective on just the coaching staff and being there. And he said, yeah, it was a good thing. And so I don't believe the NCAA has issued any kind of a recruiting shutdown past the end of August yet. But as Fedoni said, again, he said it a lot, if this thing extends into September or beyond, he's just going to have to make a decision based on what he knows and based on who he knows. And if that's criteria right now, Nebraska is in a great spot with him, and they have no tight ends committed in the 2021 class. He's the real deal. He could be a quick playing difference maker for Nebraska in future seasons, and so they're in a great spot with him. And I think ultimately the story, if he indeed ends up at Nebraska, is going to be different from what a lot of stories are for these recruits. It's often academics, facilities, maybe the coaching staff as closers. I think in this case, it would be, man, those 2021 peer recruiters and what they could do. So kind of a developing situation there, but a pretty, I think, big behind-the-scenes thing going on for Nebraska last weekend.
I think this group, this 2021 group, is a little bit different. And some of it may be the coronavirus, but they just seem pretty tight.
Oh, yeah. They did the fishing competition. They've had a dunking competition on Twitter. We've seen these guys interact a little bit, and it's not it's not fake. I mean, they enjoy hanging out. It feels like it harkens back to a simpler time when you can just trash talk. You know, you listen to Henry Lutowski or Teddy Prochaska talk about each other, not even to each other, about each other. It's constant trash talk. It's constant competition, almost like siblings. You know, you want to be better than the guy, but you can also tell they really care about each other. And so I think that's the case with some of your quieter guys in the class, your Patrick Paytons, your Randolph Kapais, guys like that, you know, we're not maybe quite as vocal or upfront about it. They've been big parts of this thing too. And yeah, it's a tight class. It might not be as highly rated as what Nebraska has brought in the last couple of years, but ultimately, you know, it could just kind of provide some of that intangible stuff, some of that karma, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
It could be really important to a program.
Yeah. I think, you know, I'm still not, this feels a lot like the 2019 class, I think is the way I want to put it. I think the 2020 class has some real talent in it. Some of the players were put together late in the process. You know, they've already had two guys leave. One of the guys didn't surprise me that he left. Kind of surprised me that Henry Gray did. Didn't surprise me that Jaden Francois did, you know. But this group that they've got here in 2021, it just feels like a group of kids who – I don't know. We know quite a bit about a lot of them. The one guy we don't know much about is Patrick Paytons, and he might be the best player in the class, but I've never talked to him. I don't really, you know, he's switching schools. It's, I don't know. But everybody else in the class is pretty, you know. I mean, Marcus Buford, he's got buddies on the team now. Lardarius Webb Jr., you know why he's there. You know why he's in the class. Malik Williams, they've recruited him for a long time. Still think the tape needs to improve, but they know, you know why he's in the class. It just feels like a group of guys that you kind of already know. You know?
Yeah, and it feels like a group, too, that seems pretty solid. Like, we talk about official visits open up again, like the mass decommitments. It just seems like – and maybe – you know, maybe this is not accurate, but it seems like they feel very comfortable with their decision. Like, they're not trying to hold a place. You know, they're not trying to save their spot or whatever. It does feel like they are in it for the long haul. And I don't, in hindsight, you know, you can look back on some of the defections they've had in recent classes and maybe you can kind of see it. But I don't know, with this group, it just seems like they check all the boxes that the coaches talk about. You know, they love football. They love competition. They didn't pull the trigger prematurely. So, you know, I think there's something to be said for that kind of level of stability too.
All right. At the end of this, we're going to do a confidence check each week when we do a podcast, just to see where we're at. So I'm going to ask 5 questions and we're going to gauge where you feel like we're at with those issues. All right. And it's on a scale of 1 to 10, each one. All right.
Participating as well.
Yeah, I am.
Okay.
Absolutely. All right. On a scale of 1 to 10, how confident are you that Nebraska plays a football game this season?
10 being the most confident?
Yes.
9.
I'm at an 8. How confident are you that Nebraska will play Rutgers in the opening game of the season?
5.
I'm at a 4. We'll see. Maybe that'll go up. I'm in the orange part of the dial. I'm not trying to make light of the coronavirus dial. I'm just saying it. I don't know. 3rd question. How confident are you that Nebraska will play its final game of the season against Michigan State?
5.
I'm a 3 on that. I think the season could get the date I'm circling is October 24th. That's when Michigan plays Ohio State. Anything after that's going to be, you know, TV gravy. That'd be my thought. We'll see. On a scale of 1 to 10, how confident are you that Nebraska can win the Big Ten West?
2.
I'm at a 4. And on a scale of 1 to 10, how confident are you that there will be a college football postseason this year. In other words, bowl games, college football playoff, that stuff.
Bowl games, I would say 0 to -1. College football playoff, 3.
I'm at a 1 on the first one, and honestly, I'm at about a 2 or 3 on the second one. So those will be the questions we ask every week. First game, last game, play any games at all, win the Big Ten West in postseason.
That's so good.
We'll see what happens. But that's going to be our podcast for this week. We'll be back next week. By then, we'll have talked to Frost and coordinators and players. We'll have a little bit more to share about the actual football portion of this, and we'll go from there. But thanks for everybody who joined. Thanks to Tom Chattel. Thanks to Evan. For Evan, for Tom, I'm Sam. Thanks for listening. Bye.